Each month, we chat with Chris Danielson, who is the PR director for the National Federation of the Blind in the United States. And we talk about some of the big stories over there. And Chris is waiting to chat with us right now. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having us again, Alan. Always a pleasure.
Now, a couple of topics we're going to mention today. Obviously, talk a little bit about the convention, the national convention that's coming up shortly. But a really interesting topic, first of all, something which we do not really discuss, because something that never comes to mind is being in prison and being visually impaired.
It stands to reason that because blind people are a cross-section of society, some of us are in jail. And although we may be in jail for things that we have done that are not so good, we have rights while we're in prison. And it's important for the prisons to respect those rights and to respect our needs for accommodations in order to live as blind people in the prison environment. So the National Federation of the Blind has been working on this issue. And on June 5th, we were able to announce that we have reached a settlement with the state of Maryland regarding a lawsuit that we had filed on behalf of 9 current and former prisoners that had been held by the state of Maryland. These were blind men, and they were not given any accommodations in prison to do things like use the prison library, read their mail. They weren't allowed to have white canes in order to move around the prison independently. And so this was obviously a violation of their rights. It violated various laws that we have in the United States, including the Americans with Disabilities Act, but it also actually put these prisoners in danger, because the only way that they could do certain things was to get help from fellow inmates. So think about the situation, for example, you're in if you're a blind inmate and you have to get a fellow inmate to read you your mail. That person may or may not be trustworthy, and they may use information that they get from your mail against you or against your family. And so, for example, we had a statement from one of our prisoners. His cellmate read some mail that he had, saw a letter from his sister, and actually wrote an obscene letter back to his little sister and harassed her. The cellmate was also very upset because our client was blind. He had never been trained in any blindness skills, and so he had trouble getting around, and including getting around the cell, and he knocked over something that belonged to his cellmate purely by accident, and his cellmate beat him up for it. And of course, the inmate couldn't even file a grievance against the inmate, because he would have had to get another inmate to help him do it. So this is the kind of situation that these prisoners were placed in because they didn't have access to a qualified member of staff or to their own computer, even in the prison library, that they could generate documents and report things that were happening to them, and also just correspond with their own attorneys, their own families, do any research that they wanted to do with regard to their legal appeals, which all prisoners have a right to do. And so it was a really shocking situation. So the state of Maryland has now agreed that, at least with respect to these 9 plaintiffs, and hopefully they will expand this, that they will make sure that equipment is available that these prisoners can use independently, that they're able to get training so that they can do things more independently, even within the limited scope of the prison environment. And in giving them that greater degree of independence, this will also protect them from their disability, their blindness being used against them.
An important thing, Chris, when you think about someone's personal safety in that kind of environment, you're looking to improve that. But also we think about prisoners themselves. You know, as part of rehabilitation, they may be encouraged to do workshops, classes, learn about trades and so on. So was all that not available either?
You are absolutely correct, Alan, and I'm glad you brought that up. That was not made available to these prisoners either. You know, when you're in prison, there are even jobs you can do, and if you do them well, or if you participate in certain programs, you actually get credit against your sentence, for example. But these prisoners were not allowed to do that because they were not given equal access to the jobs programs and to some of the educational programs that they could participate in, for example, to get their high school degree or their college degree, to work toward a college degree, as other prisoners are able to do. They were also actually segregated all the blind prisoners for its own convenience. It placed them all in one prison, and it was a medium security prison. Some of them were actually eligible for a prison with lighter security. So they were, in effect, being treated as if they were a greater security risk than they actually were. And they were housed with inmates who were actually a greater security risk solely on the basis of their blindness. There are a lot of prisoners with disabilities. And of course, we see in the general population that as we get older, for example, we may lose vision. And that is also true of people who are in prison. And sometimes people are in prison for a very long time, and deservedly so. None of this is about coddling prisoners or not treating them as if they've done something that has caused them to be incarcerated. It's just about giving them the same rights, the same privileges, and the same protections that other prisoners have. You know, prison isn't going to be a picnic for anybody, nor should it be.
Interesting one there, Chris. And again, you know, not something we really discuss at all. So, yeah, good to hear about that. Now, before we finish off, Chris, I'm just going to highlight again the fact that the National Convention for the National Federation of the Blind is coming up again this year, and you're in a new location as well.
Yes, we are in a new location. We've been in Orlando the past several years, and so I'm sure everybody got used to hearing that. But we are now in Las Vegas. We're on the West Coast of the United States. We're very excited. It's going to be our first convention ever in Las Vegas, and we are going to be at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. The preliminary numbers that we're getting for the number of people that are registered for the convention are higher than we've ever seen. People are really excited about going to Vegas. I think a lot of people who live on the West Coast or near the West Coast that haven't been able to make the trip all the way to Orlando for the last several years will find that they can easily make the trip to Las Vegas. And we expect it to be a very big, very exciting convention. And it starts on July 7th. And runs through July 12th. You can't pre-register anymore at the time we're recording this, but you can register on site. And I think there may still be hotel rooms available.
Great. So what kind of things can people expect at the convention? You're on for quite a few days.
Really, the first 3 days of the convention are devoted to the meetings of our various committees and our special interest division. So, for example, we have divisions within the organization that are made up of blind people who are lawyers or blind people who are office professionals or blind people who are into sports or blind people who own their own businesses. So we have a ton of those type of meetings. We also have the meeting of our resolutions committee, which proposes the policy statements that we adopt as part of convention. We have the meeting of our board of directors, and we have, of course, various other sessions that are related to new technologies, related to improvements in technologies, related to how you defend yourself as a blind person, related to youth activities, all sorts of things. And then in the other 3 days of the convention, the sort of second half of the convention, we actually have our general sessions, or what some people call plenary sessions, where we hear from the various technology companies, sometimes we're able to hear from political leaders, we present awards, and all of that happens in a big ballroom where all 3,000 or so of the convention attendees are gathered. And then on the last night of the convention, we have a big banquet, and that is where our president gives his annual address and where we present our 30 scholarships.
Sounds a fantastic event, Chris. We're almost out of time. So if people would like to learn more about the National Federation of the Blind, or indeed more about the convention, what's the best way to do that?
So the best way is to go to our website, nfb.org. If you haven't been there in a while, it's totally redesigned. It's much easier to find things that you're looking for, we hope. We're also, of course, on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at @NFB_voice. We're on Facebook. Just search for National Federation of the Blind. We have a YouTube channel called The Nation's Blind. So lots of ways to get in touch. And of course, there's always good old-fashioned email. You can email us at nfb@nfb.org.
Chris, pleasure speaking with you once again. We'll catch up again next month, but thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Always a pleasure, Alan. Talk to you next time.